Are you an accredited investor looking for a new opportunity to generate passive income and build the retirement of your dreams? Then elevate your investment game with Viking Capital, where wealth meets wisdom. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just starting out, Viking Capital can help guide you towards financial freedom through passive real estate investing. With strong and transparent underwriting, Viking identifies low-risk opportunities with the goal of preserving investor capital and maximizing long-term growth potential. And their accessible and responsive investor relations team will help you understand how each investment will impact your unique financial goals. With $800 million in assets acquired, more than $230 million in equity raised, and more than 5,000 units under management, Viking Capital is your path to early retirement. To learn about Viking Capital's latest investment opportunity, which is available for you right now, visit go.vikingcapllc.com/best. That's go.vikingcapllc.com/best to get started today. Did you know that within a decade, women will hold $30 trillion in investable assets? Yet somehow, only 19% of women reported feeling confident in selecting investments that align with their long-term goals. Our friends at InvestHer are out to change that. InvestHerCon is the number one premier conference for women in real estate, and it's happening June 2nd through the 4th in Austin, Texas. InvestHerCon is not just another real estate conference. It's a transformational experience focused on real estate investing, business strategies, and self-care tactics, all designed to help women take control of their financial futures. Gain the knowledge and skills you need to grow your portfolio and build a sustainable business, all while connecting with over 500 women who are playing at the same level. To learn more and to get your tickets, visit InvestHerCon.com today and use the code 100BESTEVER to get $100 off your ticket. That's InvestHer, HERCon.com, promo code 100BESTEVER to get $100 off your ticket. Quick disclaimer, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are provided for informational purposes only and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities or to make or consider any investment or course of action. For more information, go to bestevershow.com.
When we talk about financial freedom, I think it's so important to get really clear on the end game. What it is you really want to achieve?
Welcome to the Best Ever Show, the world's longest running daily commercial real estate podcast. Our hosts interview commercial real estate experts every day to get you the best advice ever with none of the fluffy stuff.
Best Ever listeners, welcome to the Best Real Estate Investing Advice Ever Show. I'm your host, Joe Cornwell. And today I'm joined by Dave Allred. Dave is the CEO of Axia Partners. They run a real estate fund with a current portfolio of over 1,200 multifamily doors. They're doing self-storage, investing in some businesses, industrial, RV parks. So he's got a wide variety of experiences. Dave, I know it's been about a year since you've been on the show. So how have you been? And thank you so much for joining us again.
Thanks for having me. One of the greatest podcasts in real estate. So it's my pleasure. I think it's actually my third time jumping on here. So excited for the conversation.
Yeah, well, we appreciate you coming back and appreciate the kind words. So why don't we start with, take me through the last year. How has your business shifted, if it has at all? And tell me what you've been up to since you've been on the show.
Sure. So since the last time I was on the show, on a personal note, my partners and I, we brought a Topgolf into Utah County, opened up about a year ago. I'm really excited about that. That was a four plus year project. Learned so much more about commercial development on that one. It's really fun to bring that to the community. It creates a lot of value for our local community here. Besides that, though, with our fund, Axia Partners, we've launched two new offerings, a fund where we focus on multifamily, self-storage, and industrial, and then also more of a syndication, an SPV, for a $50 million industrial warehouse development right here in Salt Lake County. And so really excited about that one. You mentioned RV parks, so we've done a lot of those, and they've been great cash cows. However, one thing we've learned is that it's just such an operationally heavy business model. It takes a lot of bandwidth, and the cash flow can be really, really good, but it literally is like buying a new business every time you buy a new RV park. And at the Best Ever event last year, I remember Joe Fairless spoke on this a lot as well, but industrial warehouse is projected to be the top performing asset over the next 5 years across all asset class. And so we've really doubled down on the industrial warehouse space, and we're very, very bullish on that going forward. But that project is going very, very well. We're ahead of schedule and under budget. completion here this summer, July 2024. So we're able to bring a lot of partners in on that one. So it's always fun to be able to bring great projects in for our partners, especially when it's in your own backyard.
Yeah, that's great. A couple things there I want to mention. And I don't know exactly what specific type of asset you're developing. So one of the assets that I've seen here in Cincinnati, Ohio, where I'm based, is the mixed use or flex space where they'll have some office and some warehouse space combined into single units. And obviously those can come in a wide variety of spaces. So get down to small 1,800 square feet all the way up to tens of thousands of square feet warehouse / office space. Is that what you're talking about?
This one's a little bit bigger than that. So it's 232,000 square feet. And we can demise up to four different sections to accommodate around a 50 to 60,000 square feet per user. We have a lot of interest from individual users who'd come in and take out the entire 232,000 square feet. So there is some office space to it as well, but this is more for large fulfillment companies. So I would say probably a little bit larger than what you're referring to.
Yeah, these are more like small to mid-sized business operators, but it's something popular where I'm seeing a lot of these new developments going in kind of on the outskirts of the suburbs in, you know, greater Cincinnati market. So it's interesting that you are projecting that, or there's projections for that to be the top performing asset. It makes sense that we're seeing so much development of that type of space.
And one thing that a lot of other sponsors and a lot of my good friends are focusing on, we're not doing this currently, but it's actually finding smaller mixed use industrial warehouse that's actually more of a Class B product, and then implementing that traditional value add approach to take that up to more of a Class A product. So very similar to what has been so popular in the multifamily space over the last decade. And now applying that same concept to small to medium size Class B industrial warehouse.
Now, in your opinion, are you seeing a market shift where a lot of the historical multifamily focused syndicators, investors, operators, whatever you want to refer to them as, are shifting into other spaces due to the competition? Or what are your thoughts on trends, let's say, in focusing on certain asset types?
Great question. I'm going to preface my answer by saying I love multifamily. For me, that's bread and butter. I started out buying a bunch of fourplexes. I think I had 27 fourplexes, and then went up to a 20-plex and a 62-plex and then 237 units. And I actually worked with Joe Fairless as a co-sponsor on some really large properties in Texas. So for me, it's always been kind of a special place in my heart. It's really what has been my backbone in commercial real estate. And to this day, I still feel like there's not a better way to just that reoccurring passive income mailbox money than multifamily real estate. With that being said, there's definitely been a big shift. For us at Axie Partners, I wouldn't call it a shift. I would call it more of a diversification, where I would still say multifamily is at our core. However, there's so many incredible opportunities. And with multifamily, with cap rates, interest rates, and there's still a pretty strong delta between where buyers think the asset's worth versus what the actual market value is. And that delta has been compressed and it's narrowing, but there's still a pretty decent sized delta there. And so for us, it's been a game of patience through the last year of really just kind of sitting on our hands and not doing much in the multifamily space, which frankly speaking has been hard for me because I'm a deal junkie. I love doing deals. So it's been tough, but I think that patience is a virtue. And I think right now it's very, very important. I have seen a lot of other sponsors pivot into other asset classes, whether that's debt funds, whether that's car washes. I've seen that quite a bit as well. But what's really interesting to me is the pivot I've seen some of these more experienced sponsors doing, which is jumping into more preferred equity focused positions in multifamily. There's a few funds right now that all they do is they invest in preferred equity into not necessarily distressed multifamily, but it's got some issues. There's some DSCR covenants coming up. Maybe they ran out of CapEx budget. It's not in hot water, but it's getting really warm, if you will. So being able to go in there and add value through capital infusion is interesting. I listened to the podcast, I think you were the host, with Christian, and he was explaining last week about their fund, which is actually allowing LPs to jump out of a fund to create a liquidity event for them, and the fund actually replaces their LP position. That was a really interesting concept. I'd actually never seen that in a fund structure before. So I think just getting a little more creative and a little more outside the box is not only more and more common, but I think it's actually a best practice as you look forward, considering the challenge in the market right now.
It's interesting to me that there are so many different strategies that have almost developed, so to speak, or at least become more popular, more well-known through the market shift we had during COVID and post-COVID. It's been interesting to see, again, as you said, preferred equity models, debt structures, allowing, like you said, LPs to basically be bought out. And maybe it's not even for 100 cents on the dollar, so to speak. But if an LP goes to an operator and says, I got a life event, I got this, I got that, I need to pull out early, and getting them some liquidity on their investment. So it's almost creating upside for new capital, because now if I can go in and, let's say someone had a $100,000 investment and I can go in and buy out their $100,000 placement for $80,000, obviously I'm getting upside on the day one just by replacing their equity, so to speak. So it's interesting how all of these creative solutions have came. And what I've learned from hosting this show and talking to so many high-level investors and operators is that the fundamental issue I see on almost all these deals, and you put it well put, where it's not necessarily a dying deal, a sinking ship, but it's something that's undercapitalized because of all the shifts we've had in the market, interest rates, paying down notes, banks calling, LTVs, things like that, wanting more capital. And one thing, so my background is with heavy value add on smaller deals. But it's the same issue I have. If I underwrote a deal 2 years ago and I had an 18-month construction period, we all know the last 3-4 years, no one who went into a rehab on day one had the same numbers on the back end on the rehab cost 18 months later. And obviously, a lot of us didn't foresee just how quickly costs would rise in the construction space. So I think it's cool. It's like a fundamental philosophical concept of investing where the market's going to create problems, and good operators and good investors are going to create solutions. And I think we're seeing a lot of that.
I would add to that. People ask me all the time, what's my forecast on 2024 and the fund and our assets and our investment thesis? And to simplify it, I would just say this. I'm really, really excited about where we are right now, because that distress in the market is what creates opportunities. And if you look back over the last 30 years, the top performing real estate funds in the United States are those that launched during times of economic challenge and recessions. And so for me, even though it's more challenging and it takes more work and more time in the general's tent, looking at strategy and trying to have that foresight. But really, I gotta say, I'm so excited about where we are right now, and I'm so excited about the market. I think that in 2024 is going to be some of the most incredible buying opportunities. Internally here at Axie Partners, we're calling 2024 our hunting season. So we're really gearing up on the acquisition side. And I think here around the middle of 2024, the second half of this year is going to show us some really, really incredible opportunities.
Yeah, that's a great strategy. I talked to a lot of investors over the last 8 years I've been in the business, and a lot of the people I look up to had started in that 08, 09, 2010 type of range coming out of the last major real estate recession. And what's the one thing you hear from almost every single one of those guys and gals when you talk to them is, I wish I would have bought more. I wish I would have invested more. I wish I would have did more. I wish I wouldn't have been afraid of all the conditions. But as you mentioned, whenever we're in a volatile market, a changing market where we have uncertainty, it causes a ton of fear. And that fear creates opportunities for those willing to take some risk. And it also creates opportunities because the people who came out of the 07, 08, 09 market, the last thing they want to do was go out and buy a bunch of real estate and get dead on it. So we saw, though, how we had an almost 10, 12-year bull market that no one expected. And of course, the people who were able to make the right moves back then came out well ahead 10, 12 years later.
Yeah. And it's always hard looking forward. Anytime I talk to somebody and they give this really strong opinion on what the future is going to hold, it's actually more of a red flag to me, because the truth is nobody knows. But here's what I do know. We're at about a 15-20% correction in multifamily over the last year, year and a half. And in my opinion, we're still going to see a little bit more of a correction. My best guess is closer to 25% correction from all-time highs. But the fundamentals of multifamily are still so strong, whether that's the rent by choice shift in the United States, whether that's just the overall shortage of housing in America, whether that's the housing affordability crisis and the delta between what it costs to pay for mortgage versus to pay for rent right now. All those fundamentals look very, very bullish for multifamily. So the way I look at it is, if we can go and acquire assets that have long-term stability and potential and strong cash flow and tax benefits, et cetera, at a 25% discount, that's a pretty incredible opportunity. So again, super excited about 2024 and the opportunities that lay ahead of us.
Yeah, and I talk to a lot of investors, and I'm an agent also, so I talk to a lot of clients who are buyers. But the one thing that I hear, when you hear people talking about 10, 15, 20% correction in multifamily, another common fear I'm hearing in the last few months is just how many housing starts we have for multifamily, this big wash of inventory that's supposed to be hitting the market later throughout this year. But the thing I try to remind people is it's so local. Again, I'm based in Cincinnati. We've had zero rent decline. We've had zero increase in vacancy in a major way, and we have almost no new construction building. So you hear those things, and while they're absolutely true when you look at the national market, it's not true when you get into your regional and your local markets. That's where you really have to do the research when you're picking markets to invest in. So I agree with you completely. So one thing you mentioned to me in the beginning was about this experiential investing with your business. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Sure. So prior to jumping into real estate full-time, I actually worked for a company called Vivint Smart Home, selling home security systems, and then also for sister company Vivint Solar, selling residential solar systems. And so that's direct-to-consumer sales, helped manage 121 sales teams in 41 states, and led thousands of sales reps across the country. And I learned so much through that. It was going to be 4 months summer sales program in college, and it turned into a 15-year leadership career. And when I shifted out, I was buying real estate the whole time. It was always about creating more freedom, financial freedom for me and my family. And so I was aggressively taking that active income, putting into passive income real estate. And I just didn't want to pay a lot of taxes. So I'd ask my CPA, what's the best way to mitigate a tax liability? And he's like, real estate. So that's actually what planted the seed in this journey down the road of real estate. Anyway, fast forward 2017, I decided to completely retire from that industry and go full-time into real estate. And I really liked it. However, what I found out, spending time on spreadsheets, I was in my office all day, and I really missed the human aspect of sales leadership and working with all these young, ambitious guys and helping to create leaders and really focus on the interpersonal development of these guys. So the challenge was, how can I incorporate some of that leadership skill and that human side of it into the real estate space? So I came up with this term. I call it experiential investing. If you go to our axiepartners.com website, it's actually on our homepage in big font. And I'm really proud of it, Joe. I think it's a very unique value proposition. And to break it down, obviously our primary objective is to protect investor capital and get a return on that capital, so an ROI. But secondarily to that, it's also to create an ROE, so it's a return on experience. And we do a lot of things with that. Monthly webinars. I actually had Joe Fairless on a few months ago. We're just the top guys in the industry, in the country, coming on and just teaching for an hour, followed by 30 minutes of Q&A. So every month we do that. Every time we close on a deal or go under contract, we do a full webinar with all of our LPs, and we show exactly how we found the deal, our underwriting model, how we source the debt, our value add game plan, disposition plan, the entire thing. So it's full transparency into how we do what we do. It's pulling back the curtains and, again, just full transparency. And it's been received very, very well. What I've found is a lot of LPs really want to be doing these type of commercial real estate deals. They just lack the confidence and the competence. So if we can create value in a unique way through education and experience, I've loved the process of doing this. And I've yet to see another firm that does this. We send out a swag box to our LPs with shirts and hats and all that kind of stuff. But it's just a unique way of approaching a real estate, and it's been a lot of fun. And I think why that's so much fun for me is we have about 400 investors at Axie Partners, and it's all just very organic. It's my social network. We've never paid for an ad, never done a Facebook ad. It's just all word of mouth and repeat investors. So the people I care about. So to be able to actually add value, not just economic value, but educational and experiential value has been fun. And the last thing here, the whole focus on experiences has been really important to me. I feel like experiences are the new economy. Whether it's baby boomers or millennials or Gen Z, people want experiences in life. So everything that I do in my own personal life, it's very experiential. My family and travel, the restaurants that I'm involved with, they're all very experiential. I mean, Topgolf's one of the most experiential ways to go play golf. And so anyway, just want to share that with your listener base. I do feel like experiences are the new economy. So no matter what type of real estate you're in, if you're a real estate agent or commercial or a broker or whatever that is, if you can craft an experience around how you do your business, it'll set you apart and really help differentiate you.
I love that. And I can speak from my personal experience where I have done a handful of joint venture deals, smaller scale again. And one thing I commonly get when I've had people approach me about partnering on deals is they want to learn. Like you're saying, they want to be involved in the process. They want to understand it. And it's challenging. It's challenging as someone who does the day-to-day operations and investment and in business. That's a whole nother time suck, so to speak. So the fact that you and your company is offering that is great. And I agree. I think that is a good value that is going to help drive investors because they can place their money in a lot of places. And we all know that. But to be able to learn and be involved in some of the actual ongoings and be able to, again, have that experience on top of the return is a great asset. I did want to follow up on the Topgolf thing. So you have answered some of my questions on it, but what drove you to even want to invest in that? And I'm assuming that's some sort of franchise because we have one here in Cincinnati, but I'm assuming that franchise model. Can you tell me how and why you got into it?
Sure. So as a sales leader in 41 states with all these sales guys, I would often take my teams out to Topgolf to go do incentives or team culture events. And I realized that everybody always had a great time. Nobody walks out of Topgolf, man, that was lame. I didn't have fun. That was boring. So living in Utah County, which is the second largest county in Utah, there's no premium entertainment. There's literally no options. There's a Fat Cats bowling alley, a few things. And there's two huge universities, BYU, Utah University, 72,000 college students. And I just had the idea, this would be really cool to bring a Topgolf in here. And by the way, it wasn't just me. I have a few partners on this as well. So we started working on this. Ended up buying the land. We couldn't get Topgolf to come in at that time because it's just too small of a county and they're worried about alcohol sales and a few different factors. And so after trying to get Topgolf in, they wouldn't come in. I decided to take it on my own shoulders and go compete head to head with Topgolf. So I created what's called the Golf Club, direct competitor, basically 90, 95% the exact same business model. Had full renderings on it, city approval, $3 million of RDA tax increment money lined up for it. And we were literally on the 1 yard line. And then we just realized the risk profile on this has changed a little bit from what we initially told investors. We raised just under $10 million from about 25 investors. And one thing I'm really proud of, Joe, I've never lost a dollar of investor capital in any real estate deal I've ever done. And I'm really proud of that reputation. So the risk profile was changing on this. I'm like, this is a very complex business. It's literally 10 businesses in one. It's entertainment. It's the nightlife. It's the technology. It's the actual golf itself. And then it's three different liquor licenses. It's just very, very complex. And so we decided to shift. And I talked to my investors. Hey, guys, listen, I apologize. I just want to be fully transparent here. We can still do this 100%. It's green light. There's no issues stopping us from moving forward on this one. But I just want you to know the risk profile has completely changed from how I communicated to you originally. So I had a vote on it, and it was unanimous that we should shift. And so we wanted to do a multifamily apartment complex. We're going to put in a big high-end gym. We're going to put in mixed use. And it just never quite felt like the highest and best use of the land. So about a 2 year process kind of up in the air, which by the way, was very stressful. It was probably the most challenging decision I had to make in my professional career, because when you have all that investor capital and you're on the 1 yard line, your name's all over this. Your ego's involved in it too. I go to my dentist office and the dentist is like, man, I can't wait to bring my company down there with you. And you go to your chiropractor, I can't wait for the golf club. And then to have to shift all of that, like, hey, we're actually not doing that anymore, was challenging. But in hindsight, it was definitely the right call. So fast forward a little bit, we re-engaged with Topgolf because they have one in Salt Lake County and they're crushing it. They're in the top quartile. So re-engaged with Topgolf, and it was a long process, but we ended up getting a 20-year triple net lease. And so they came in, basically my partners and I own the land and the building. Then Topgolf has a 20-year triple net lease with a corporate guarantee. So, which actually worked out perfect for us. It's true mailbox money where we just sit back and we get a check every month. And we have no operational responsibility on the project whatsoever. So again, in hindsight, so many lessons learned. So grateful for how it worked out for my investors. And one last thing, you mentioned you guys have one out there. So what happened was Callaway used to own 14% of Topgolf. And then a few years back, they actually bought out the entire equity stack. So now Callaway owns 100% of Topgolf. And so there's no way to franchise or get territory rights anymore because
it's just a public company.
That's right.
Okay, makes sense.
We'll get back to the show with first some sponsors I'm confident you'll find value in learning more about. If you're an investor like me, you're probably looking for one platform to manage the banking and finance needs of your entire portfolio. The good news is there is one. It's called Baselane, and it's the number one banking platform built for independent real estate investors that reduces busy work so you can focus on growing your business. With Baselane, you can earn up to a 4.19% annual percentage yield and 5% cash back on debit card spending with no monthly fees. With a simplified view of your cash flow and expenses, you can retire those tedious spreadsheets. You can also manage unlimited virtual accounts and cards, and even open separate accounts for each property or unit. Join more than 40,000 real estate investors who trust Baselang for their banking, property management, and bookkeeping. Head over to baselang.com/Joe and sign up today for a chance to win a $500 Amazon gift card. That's baselang.com/Joe.
Well, that's cool. I appreciate you sharing that story. And I am starting to branch out and invest in other businesses. So that's why I was so curious about how your path went on that development. So you're in Salt Lake or near Salt Lake. Is that what you said?
Yes. Provo, Utah.
Okay. So I assume I'm going to make an assumption here that you're going to be at the conference April 9th through 12th.
Absolutely. I've been there the last awesome. 5 years in a row.
I'm looking forward to seeing you there. I will be there as well. Are you presenting anything this year?
Good question. I don't think so, but I'm happy to put it out there.
I'll say, if not, I'm certainly happy to link up with you when you're there. I know we still have some tickets for sale. So if you're listening to this and haven't bought one, we'll be coming up on April. Make sure you get your tickets and meet us out in Salt Lake for Best Ever Conference, April 9th through 12th. All right. And the last thing I wanted to ask you about before we go to the lightning round, and I know we talked about this briefly, is your investments and your philosophy on investing and investing for financial freedom and lifestyle freedom. So why don't you just walk me through your journey on that, how it started, how you even learned about it and wanted to develop that?
So I'm out selling home security systems. I was door to door, which is probably one of the hardest ways to make money. And I just realized, you know, after doing that for a while, why am I really doing this? Like, what's my holy cause, my purpose here? And I'd heard the term financial freedom, and I didn't really fully understand what that meant. I was young, I was 23, 24 years old. Anyway, I've been talking about wanting financial freedom for a long time. Fast forward when I was 30 years old, I remember sitting down on a Sunday for 4 hours and like, you know what? I'm gonna commit to financial freedom. There's a big difference between being committed to something and just wanting it. So sat down for 4 hours and I just reverse engineered exactly how much passive income that I need. It's a really simple equation. Take a spreadsheet out. The first line item is, what's my total cost of living? Everything all in, your car payment, insurance, medical, food, gas, all of it. Next line item is, well, how much passive income do I have right now? And maybe you have $50,000, let's say, as an example, some dividend stock or a condo, townhome. The next line item is, well, what's the gap? So in that scenario, for me, it was I needed $200,000. I had $50,000 already. So the gap was $150,000. The next line item was, how many years am I willing to commit to achieving this financial freedom? And for me, it was 10 years. So I put 10 years in there, divide that 10 years by $150,000. That means I need $15,000 per year of new passive income. And by the way, guys, real quick, to me, that's so big in life is to have these big, hairy, audacious goals, but you got to break them down into bite-sized, digestible goals. So the next step was, okay, well, how can I create that passive income? I've heard real estate's good. There's tax benefits there. So let's do the math on that. And it was, I need to have 40 rental properties by age 40. And so my mantra became 40 by 40. And I changed all my passwords to 40 by 40, my home screen on my iPhone, 40 by 40. And I just really internalized that. And every single Sunday I'd sit down, I'd measure that incremental improvements to that goal. And so that's really where it started. I hit that goal when I was 36 years old. And that's when I decided to retire and go full-time into the real estate space. And I reset that goal to having ownership in 1,000 doors by age 40. I teamed up with Joe Fairless and Dan Hanford and Neil Bowen and a lot of these guys and achieved that goal 1 month before turning 41. So I hit that goal and that's when I decided to launch Axie Partners in the fund space. But that's really been the journey. It's been really fun. I think one of the keys there has been having proximity to people that are doing what I really wanted to be doing. I love the expression that there's power in proximity. I think that's been a huge catalyst for me. Secondarily, I'd say it's having all those goals in writing. I think supposedly, statistically, it's 42% higher probability of hitting your goal if it's in writing. So what that did for me was it just gave me accountability, but even more importantly, it gave me the motivation to see those little incremental improvements along the way. So that's my journey. Super grateful for it. And originally, it was really focused on this financial freedom. And once I achieved the financial part of it, the focus actually evolved to a focus on time freedom, which time is our ultimate resource. And once I was able to achieve the time freedom, it's really evolved from there to lifestyle freedom. So again, from financial freedom, then to focusing on time freedom, then focusing on lifestyle freedom. And lifestyle freedom to me, I would just define as curating your dream lifestyle, but instead of waiting for some day down the road, really trying to implement that into your life today so you can really live life fully with purpose and passion and impact.
I could not agree more. I relate completely to that story and your journey. Had a very similar path. And it's funny, as you're describing all the things you did and how you did it, it's almost exactly the same way I did it. I broke it down to how many units I needed, how many doors, what type of apartments, how much I could pay for each one based on my income at the time and all that stuff. So yeah, I got really detailed with it. But obviously, as you mentioned, write your goals, create a path, and just know that over a 5-10 year plan, your path's going to change, and that's okay. As you mentioned, you shifted your goal from 40 by 40 to investing in 1,000 units by 40. And I'm sure that came from wisdom and experience that helped you detail your path in a better direction.
Yeah, Joe, if I could ask a little bit back to you, what would you say is maybe one big takeaway for the listener base that really helped you through that process? Because I think that almost probably every listener wants to have financial freedom. I've never met somebody who's like, no, I don't want that financial freedom. So I don't want to make it sound really simple, but success leaves tracks. And that's why I love sharing this journey, going into the details, how we use the 1031 exchanges to be able to parlay that, not pay tax along the way, and really focusing on the cash on equity versus just cash on cash. Like, that was a huge part for me, was realizing that the velocity of money and cash on cash is fun. It's what we always pay attention to. But if you really want to aggressively grow a portfolio, then you've really got to pay attention to the cash on equity, because that cash on equity is actually going down every month with the principal reduction as well as market appreciation. So some of those things that I think that a lot of times we just don't really understand those fully, and can have somebody show us the way, it can accelerate that journey so much faster.
Yeah, there's so many things I could speak to there. As far as when I set my initial goal, so I was actually a police officer before I went into real estate full time. I was about 5 years into my career. I was in my mid-20s, and I realized that at a bare minimum, I wanted to work towards financial freedom because I didn't want to be forced to stay in my job for another 25, 30 years. So I didn't necessarily at that time have a plan to retire early, and that wasn't necessarily the goal, but I set a goal for 10 years to have enough passive income to pay my bills. And at the time, my bills were really low. So it wasn't a huge goal. A couple of years into that, getting some momentum experience, and I was doing all BRRRR investing. So as you mentioned, I was having the velocity of money, cashing out most of my capital and recycling it. But I quickly realized that, okay, this 10-year goal is really achievable in 4 or 5 years. So that was my path. And then as soon as I hit financial freedom, I knew, okay, well, now I could leave my job and focus on things that are more enjoyable, higher income, better schedule, more freedom, all those things you mentioned that I related to so well. That was my path. And I've spoke in detail about it on the show, so I'm sure people have heard it by now. But one thing you mentioned, and I have a phrase that's similar, I tell a lot of investors, it's not easy, but it is simple. And what I mean by that is achieving your path is not complicated. Anybody can do it. No matter where you're at, what starting point you're at, I think anyone truly can achieve it if they do the right things. And again, it's not complicated. It's very easy, but it's very simple, but it's not easy. And the difficult part is staying consistent, staying on the path when it gets hard, because it will. To me, it's a lot like working out. Nobody likes working out, or most people don't like working out. It's really hard, especially if you haven't been in the gym in 5 years. Going in and running, going in and lifting weights, it makes you feel like crap. It hurts. It sucks. You're tired. But if you do it every day for a year, your life's going to be completely different than it was. And I think financial freedom is a very similar journey. It's kind of uphill, and you got to build momentum.
Either the pain of discipline or the pain of regret. It really is. It's that delayed gratification. I've got 4 kids. I'm always trying to teach my kids the principle of delayed gratification, which I think is a lost art form. I mean, people nowadays, they want a dopamine hit. They want to see the immediate upside. But really, I found in my life that the things that I'm most proud of and that I've got the most fulfillment from are actually the hardest things that I've had to do. And my motto in my life is, if something scares you, it usually means you should do it. And it's the same thing even in real estate. Sometimes the best deals that I've done have been ones that have a lot of hair on them. They're scary. People don't want to do it because they're going to be hard, but that has the most upside. And I just want to echo one more thing there. When we talk about financial freedom, I think it's so important to get really clear on the end game. What it is you really want to achieve? And I'm talking end game, big, big picture, your legacy. For me, I have this thing called lifestyle design. It's 10 different parts of my life that I want to be great at. It's all in writing, and how I want to make sure I can live my life with no regret and with real purpose and passion and impact. And so I've written out exactly what I want to do in each one of these 10 different categories. But I'll kind of wrap it up by saying, I really feel like the more clarity you can get around why you're doing what you're doing, the better. And it's not just another zero in your bank account. Honestly, there's not a lot of fulfillment that comes from that per se. For me, what it's been is really envisioning, what's that money going to do for my family, my quality of life, my freedom? How am I going to be more present as a father, coaching my son, sports teams, to be able to have my three beautiful daughters go on amazing honeymoons and weddings and be able to experience that? And by the way, I grew up in a broken, dysfunctional home, and I just want to have my kids have the best quality of life and the doors of opportunity open up for them. To be able to go and travel to 60 countries, that fires me up, that experience, that freedom. I went running with the Bulls this last summer in Spain, Mount Everest expedition a few years ago. And right now I'm really into biohacking and health and peptides and stem cells and regenerative health. Those are things that I'm really passionate about. But the money is a tool. It's a resource to be able to help accelerate and open up those opportunities for you. The more you can get real clarity around why you want to have more financial means, that financial freedom, to me, I just feel like it comes easier. And the journey is so much more fun because there's purpose behind why you're putting that sacrifice and grinding so hard.
Couldn't agree more. I could talk about this all day with you. All right, you ready to transition to the best ever lightning round? Best ever book recommendation.
Best ever book recommendation is As a Man Thinketh. However, the newest one I just finished last month, it's called Buy Back Your Time by Dan Martell. Phenomenal book. It's just a bunch of best practices on how to delegate and free up more bandwidth and focus on your time and what's most important.
Best ever way you like to give back.
Through Aldred Family Foundation, I created this and have all four of my children on the board of directors. Each of my kids were able to choose the charity they want to donate to. So all of them are employees of my own real estate company, and I pay them a wage, a nice little tax deduction there as well. And then a percentage of that wage goes automatically into our family foundation. And then they have full autonomy with which charities they want to go and contribute that to. So that's been really, really fun to teach kids while they're young that giving is living.
Very cool. And give me a mistake you made in one of your investments and a lesson you learned from it.
I'm going to go to my very first multifamily acquisition, 2007, not the best time to be buying multifamily. I read a book called Multifamily for Dummies, those black and yellow books. And I literally thought I had it figured out. So I Google real estate agents, Salt Lake County, find somebody. There are only two multifamily properties available in the entire county. The market was so hot at that time. Bought this fourplex. At the closing table, my agent leaned over after I signed everything. And she goes, "Hey, Dave, I just want to say thank you for my very first real estate transaction." Shakes my hand. Like, hold on a minute. My fault for not having asked better questions. And then 7 months later, after acquisition, the city of Riverton sent me a letter notifying me that I was illegally renting out a duplex to four families. And it turns out there's actually a duplex with two mother-in-law units in the basement. So I actually had to evict two families and went from four streams of income down to two, negative cash flowing a lot, and then 2009, sold it for $60,000 loss. So basically learned all the lessons as to what not to do. But I'm really grateful for that because it really helped me teach a lot of those principles and those life lessons, what not to do in the real estate game.
Well, you are a shining example of what I mentioned earlier, where so many people have bad experiences on their first or second investment deal and they totally get out of the race altogether. And you were one of the outliers that was able to stay with it, be persistent. And obviously you've had tremendous success because of that. So kudos to you for continuing on that journey even after struggles. And so my last question is, where can our audience learn more about you or connect with you?
Pretty easy on social media. Just type in Dave Allred. That's A-L-L-R-E-D. Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, any of those platforms. Also, I just launched a new website. It's just www.daveallred.com. To learn more about Axia Partners, it's axiapartners.com. Axia is A-X-I-A. But yeah, I'd love to keep in contact with the community. And if I can ever add value and help out, I'm always happy to do so. My all-time favorite quote is Zig Ziglar. He says, "You can have everything you want in life if you help enough other people get what they want." So Joe, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it. It's always fun jumping on here, and I love you guys' community, man. You guys are doing big things.
Well, we appreciate you coming, and thank you again. I know it's been a while since you've been on, but we appreciate you coming back. We'll be sure to link to your website in the show notes. So thanks again.
We'll see you in Salt Lake next month.
Yep, can't wait to catch up there. Best ever listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to leave a 5-star review and share this episode with someone who may gain value from it. Remember to follow and subscribe to our podcast and social media so you don't miss anything. And thank you all, and have a best ever day.
Hi, Best Ever listeners. Joe Fairless here again. And one last thing before you go, would you like to receive a short weekly email with proven tips from experienced investors, free tools and resources, and a roundup of the week's most relevant news and best ever content? Well, if so, join the community of nearly 15,000 commercial real estate passive and active investors who receive the Best Ever newsletter. Just go to bestevercre.com/access. And you'll get the very next one. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And as always, thank you for listening and have a best ever day.